Shoot. All right, Lady Ballers. So this week, it seems like the Lady Balls podcast is me just interviewing all my best friends. All the best stories come from my best friends. So, hey, this week, and we're actually on video this week, I'm interviewing one of my besties, Victoria Gibson, and we're going to be talking about when Victoria has strapped on her lady balls in her life. This is fun because we're usually talking about hardcore marketing shit and all of that, whereas this time we're just going to talk about your story, get inspired, and just riff and talk about good times. So thanks for playing.
Ah, my pleasure. Good to be here. And I do love this topic so, because I think even in our marketing community, there's already a layer of women who've stepped up to do something really different, right? Like, it's not the normal path to not have a conventional job. And I'm sure your mum and dad are probably still like, Jodes, maybe you should go get a real job, you know, like this internet thing, surely, you know, but you've been an entrepreneur for like forever. They're probably like, why didn't you go get a job? But so there's already really, you know, brave women out there, right? But I think it's really nice to hear stories, real life stories, where someone has done something maybe you're thinking about.
And keep it fucking real, because you get sick of, like, especially in the marketing arena, of people, I was living in my car, and they tell their story, and then you think, well, I can't relate to that, because I've never lived in a car, and I've never had a near-death experience, so...
No. And do you know what? Also, experiences for women who set themselves up to achieve a lot. Some may call them type A, some may call them high achievers. It can be a blessing and a curse, right? In that, I can't really tell, like, those, and then I'm, can I swear on your podcast or?
Fuck yeah, it's fine. Okay. Jeez.
Just checking. I thought I'd be able to, but I want to make sure. I do not want to start. You have to censor it. I was going to go, Jodes, keeping it real, we should probably be swearing. But I was going to say, I haven't really, like, of course I've made mistakes, and I'm not trying to say I'm perfect, but I didn't really intend to set up a life where things went horribly wrong. Things have gone wrong, but I've always managed to, you know, hustle, make income, be relatively successful in what I've chosen to do. So there's no woe is me, but there's times where
you're never going to be homeless living in a car.
No, I'm just not, because I'm a Taurus and I like buying my nice things too much for that shit. So
you said something before you started saying, and I've actually got it here on a piece of paper. Four words, because we're talking about the pain points of a lady baller, and I stuck it on a post-it note on here. Lady balls, they're control freaks, overachievers, beat themselves up, and they're a hot mess most of the time. So that's pretty much us.
Brilliant. I like that. Also, some of the issues with being a lady baller is that sometimes if something feels off, or you know you're striving for more, you just haven't got that bridge to get there, which is what you can help gather. And sometimes that bridge just comes from being in a collective of women who think like you. They may not be like you on the outside, but they think like you and they want more. And sometimes just having that gives you the balls and the stories, and people being brave enough to share that they feel like that too is, I know it sounds really kind of woo-woo, but it's not. It's, as you know, that is so, so critical to meet people like you.
So tell me then, let's hear your story. I know that there's lots of times where you've embraced your lady balls, but what's kind of been the biggest pivot point in your life where you've like, fuck this, I need to balls up, get gutsy and take this leap? What's been the biggest one for you?
I think definitely starting my own business. I've got two. One is, you know, leaving my marriage with two small kids. The other is jumping out of corporate, really. Both, I think, were kind of pushed by other, there's sort of some elements. Like, I'd love to say, I was so brave. Like, say at work, we'll take the work one because it's probably, you know, the most relevant for a lot of people than thinking about, could I leave behind a safe, you know, job and go out and really chase my dreams? And for me, it was starting, I was starting to think about that, and in that I was newly divorced. I had started dating this guy who had his own business, and he'd say things like, oh, do you want to go to, let's go to the Greek islands. I'll get some like first class flights on points. And I was like, yes, please. And then I'd be like, we'd go there, we'd go stay in all the nice hotels. And I was like, this guy's not that fucking smart. Like, what the hell is going on here? I don't, because I've never really been exposed to entrepreneurial, like, people or business owners. And I was like,
doesn't that drive you nuts? Because you think, I mean, I think we're pretty fucking smart. And then you see really not smart people.
It's just not about how smart you are. And I think,
you know what I reckon it is? And what? I say this all the time. This sounds so horrible. People who are not that smart
don't overthink it.
Overthink things. Yeah. Don't overcomplicate
actually,
shit like we do.
It's actually a bonus not to be that smart, because the amount, especially when I see women, my women clients, well, I only deal with women, and the amount though, even for me, and I love overthinking and stopping myself and, you know, hey, I'm not on here saying I've got it all and I'm always so ballsy. I think most of my friends would describe that I am quite ballsy, but fuck, of course I overthink things and wait till they're perfect and all that kind of stuff. Like, purpose is more important than perfect, right? Yeah. Being on purpose is, as you well know, but far out, where is it? But I think that's the thing. Some people are just brave and dumb enough to do it better, right?
Or and, so smart that they keep it simple.
Yes. And also,
you know what is, it's not about being dumb. It's not, it's the emotions. It's like taking the emotions out of it.
It's the doubt. It's the fear and the doubt that that rise up. So I think I started thinking, hey, you know, I really liked having my own business, but what the hell could I do? I had no idea. So anyway, long story short, something happened at work, and I went on a a health retreat. Oh, cool! Went on a health retreat and for a week, and I was recognizing that I was pretty kind of burnt out. I was pretty stressed. You know, I had 3 and 4 year old daughters and single mum. But my ex husband did step up, and he had them week on week off. It wasn't like I had them the whole time on my own. And I had pretty nice corporate management gig. And anyway, long story short, and my manager didn't like me, or he didn't think I was performing the way that I should. And I won't go, it's a boring story, but it didn't feel boring to me at the time. But actually, some of my team really supported me, and they were like, when I came back, there was like, this guy wants to meet with you. He just sent me an email, hey, I want to meet with you, have a performance discuss, a performance review. Not, and I was like, I'm not doing a performance review. And then my marketing manager said to me, oh yeah, he was in here snooping around, and one of the other girls had been saying that you weren't really here very much and all this kind of stuff. Yeah, because I had a 3-year-old and a 4-year-old, and I'd have to take them to school and I'd have to pick them up. You know what I mean? Like, and she didn't know that I'd asked for flexible working hours. So anyway, long story short.
Man, you'd have a field day with that situation and now.
Yeah, well, very much so. So no, it's all right. I already had my field day with this, because don't worry, I didn't let him get away with it. So he said, oh, your staff don't think you support. Oh no. And of course I had the heads up. My marketing manager told me that he had been snooping around. There'd been murmurs and blah, blah, blah. So I recorded the conversation that he came to me with, which wasn't due a performance review. But anyway, he just came out with, oh, your staff don't believe that you support them, or, you know, all this list of things that this girl had obviously said. And one of the other girls had said something too when I'd made her kind of step up and make phone calls to do this stuff. And she didn't want to. She wanted to watch me do it. You know, people want to learn, and I probably should have been more sensitive to that. But I'm just like come on, just strap your lady balls on and do
just
it yourself.
Get it done.
Yeah, like, what the hell do you have to
proactive,
watch?
Be...
Why do you have to watch me do something? You, like, go do it. I've just told you how to do it. Work it out. You don't have to overthink it. It doesn't have to be perfect. Mm. Anyway, long story short, that happened. And I just sort of, at least I was prepared for it and I wasn't blindsided. And I just sort of said, well, look, I need your help. You're my manager who would never show up or give me guidance. I go, can you tell me how to figure this out? I don't know. And then he was like, oh, I'll have to ring HR. Whatever. A couple of weeks later, I got something in my pigeonhole that said, this is a warning. You know, like, I got an official warning about my performance because of that, apparently not supporting my team, which I take that on the chin. But I'd never got a fucking warning before. And I rang up the HR and I said, what the hell is this? Like, all my metrics, you know, all my KPIs are sky high. what the hell am I getting this warning? You know, I'm just not going to accept this. And she goes, oh, well, we're not questioning the performance of, like, you know, you getting your targets and stuff, but, you know, it's about the team. And I said, all right, well, that's fine, but I've requested the help and I do not want this warning on my, you know, I can tell what they're doing, right? Like, obviously. So that sort of pushed me further to go, it's do or die, right? Like, now's the time. If I'm going to go, I've got to go. So what I did, I said, I'm going to write a letter then or something. I said to her, she goes, fine, you can write a letter. And I went home with the vision in my mind. I'd already been toying with the idea of leaving, right? And I guess that's where the universe throws those things. Well, are you going to it? No. It's like, of course, that would have had some bearing on why things weren't going so well, because my head was already like, I don't really want to be here anymore. Mm-hmm. So I take responsibility for all of that. But anyway, went home, sat down, wrote this letter, because the same guy, and this is why, even though he was such a painful guy to date, because I really liked him so much, and he never really liked me that much back. One of those scenarios, which, you know, you like to just haul around like, I don't know, some crappy baggage that you don't need. But I have to thank him. And actually, like, 5 years later, I went out on a dinner date with him again, and he goes, oh, I just have to say sorry, I was such an asshole to you. And I said, you weren't. You were, like, the best thing that happened to me upon reflection, because you showed me that I could have a business and make my own money. You showed me how that worked. I'd never seen that in action. And the other thing he showed me was that he always used to get sued in his business by his employees. And so one time I had to help him out by reading the legislation of the Fair Work Act, and just there was a few things that they were disputing the people that worked for him. So I had read the Fair Work Act quite substantial, you know, in trying to impress him and help him out. And so when I saw this in writing where they said, with the warning, I was like, well, hang on, you're giving me a warning about something I've actually asked for help with. And I'm like, let me go and read the Fair Work Act. So I went and read it again. And there was this thing in there that says, if your employee asks for flexible work conditions, you have to give them a written reply. You don't have to give them flexible working conditions, but you have to give them a written reply. And I was like, brilliant. I asked for him and he never replied. So I wrote this letter that was just like, and under the Fair Work Act, blah, blah. Basically, I just said, I'd love you to work out a, oh God, I had the best words. I wrote this letter, no shit, you know when you're in flow, 20 minutes. It made me $120,000. I walked out, so it said something like an exit strategy. That were the words I used. I said, so I'd like you to, you know, create an exit strategy or devise an exit strategy and let me know what that is. Like, I'm not leaving. And you won't be firing me, but we'll work out something that kind of works, you know. And the next day the head of HR rang up and he said, oh, look, you know, there's probably been good and bad on both sides, but how about you leave on Friday with, you know, 6 months pay and a bonus. And yeah, I walked out with 120 grand. So it was okay, thank you. Okay. Yes. I think the universe was telling me, I mean, that didn't feel pleasant, by the way. Like, it was still a bit ick and
but it was fair.
I didn't do anything wrong. Like, obviously, there was some performance issues. I don't think it was handled well on either side, but it was all I needed to go, well, it's now or never. So then I had a little buffer. So I was kind of lucky. I didn't really jump out, you know, without my parachute, but sometimes all you need, like, I could have easily just still stayed there and gone, I'll have to try and work something out, but I didn't. I just went, no, you know what, I'm going to push the button on this. And it was the best thing that could have ever happened. So yeah, that was how I jumped out and then haven't been back. That was in July 2010. So
lady balls up.
Yeah.
Smart though, so smart, and
it was
smart and tactical. And you know what? So many people would be in that position and they would just take it until they feel like they're just a smaller former version of themselves. And yes, they would carry that shit and those beliefs with them the rest of their lives. But you have the balls to stand up for yourself.
And not that this is easy to do, and I'm not to say that I haven't done it in the past, but I didn't get emotional in the key discussions. And I think that's really important. And I think it's really important in relationships with men as well. Men don't respond well to emotion. Not, and I'm saying generalizations. I know some men.
No, that's so true.
You've got to, and I say this to clients who are like, oh shit, I really want to your program, but I'm not sure my husband's going to let me, you know, invest. And I'm like, you go with a business plan to your man. You do not go with all your fears, doubts and emotions, because guess what? All he wants to do is protect you. Yeah. And often the same is true in business, not that they want to protect you, but it just dilutes your power. And I'm not saying don't embrace your emotions and don't be real, but there's a time and a place, and sometimes it does dilute your power. You can feel it when those tears are riling up. You do not feel powerful when you're crying. Yep. I'm not saying don't cry, because I cry a lot, and it's, you have to do it. My daughters do, and my daughter last night came and sat on my lap and was bawling her eyes out, and I'm like, it's okay. Like, and I have to then go, I don't have to try and fix everything. You can just cry and it's
okay. And I think that's what men do, that Owen and I have this discussion all the time. He cannot handle me crying. He will not, because he wants to fix it, because he comes from a place of love and he's trying to be supportive. And so, sometimes it sounds like being extremely unsupportive, but really it's his version of being supportive.
Yes. So you've got to have your people you can cry to, and it might just be yourself. It might be like I cry to my mum, or I cry to, you know, my friends. You know, I'd ring you up and have a ball if I, you know, it's okay to have
a basket case with my friends.
Yeah. And then, so know where to kind of do that to protect your power. And it's not like, I definitely don't want to put any shame around crying, because I cry a lot.
Oh, shit, no.
But that's, I think
I watched the Rocket Man the other night.
Oh, yeah.
I got a few hours to myself with the kids who are out with the grandparents. And I went, watched Rocket Man, had a couple of wines. And you know how in the movie he's got Bernie, the songwriter, who writes a song 50 years later, and he was like his rock and support.
Bernie Taupin,
Well, I watched it and I messaged one of my friends, and I said to her, oh my God, I just watched Rocket Man. You have to watch it, because I am the flamboyant, dramatic queen who's always losing their shit in highs and lows.
Yeah.
My Bernie, because you sit there and listen and you don't judge while I'm just being a fucking basket case. Have you seen it? She's going, I know what you're saying.
It's so true. And I have a best friend like that too. And we haven't actually lived in the same state in Australia for like the last 20 years.
Yeah, neither do we now.
She's got your birthday too, by the way. It's weird how people with your birthday come into my life a lot. But I must just love those Leos.
Yeah.
So yeah, she when we recognized that back, do you remember the movie Beaches? Of course you do, with Bette Midler, and You're the Wind Beneath My Wings. That's the same dynamic, like the crazy flamboyant and then the stalwart kind of happy to not be in the spotlight, and it's okay. And that is the key to a beautiful dynamic in friendship, I tell you what, because it just works.
But doesn't it make you go, oh my gosh, I must be the most annoying friend. I'm surprised you answers my calls. But they get a buzz out of being that support for you, being that outlet, like that fills them up.
And they often,
like, I know, you crazy bitch.
they love you. They live vicariously through you doing that. They like that, because they wouldn't do it themselves. It's not their choice, but they enjoy some element of it. So yeah, no, I definitely like that. But I think in terms of making those decisions where you might want to start a business, you might want to leave a job, and you need to perhaps get your partner on board, or you need to negotiate a favorable outcome with your employer, definitely stick, like, get your strategy pants on. Like, it's got to be, we've got to work out what's the outcome you want and then work back from that. Like,
even with children, I find, and it can sound, it's not manipulation. It can sound like manipulation, but it's not. It's communicating in a language to get the result you want.
Yes, exactly. And making it about the, you know, like Kevin used to always say, our film Memento, the data, not the drama. You know, like data, or even, another thing he had said that Anthea reminded me of the other day. I don't think I ever heard him say this, but I love it all the same once she explained it. I didn't get it when she first said it. But then when she said it, what was it? Measurement without judgment, which is kind of data and drama thing as well, like just measuring the facts. And being a coach as well, like, it's so important to go back in, well, hang on, why are we judging this? Why are we judging that you did a webinar and you didn't like it, or it wasn't the best webinar you ever did? We don't need to go into a decline about it. We'll just do it again. Like, let's just look at the facts. Okay, well,
light bulb, you know what not to do, you know what to do, and keep moving.
Yeah, so I think especially being a highly emotional, full-on kind of person, I've had to learn, and I'm still not there yet at all, but it's so important for me not to go into drama. And I have a catastrophizing mother as well who loves to go into drama. I'm going to Europe with her.
That's for 3 weeks. That Owen uses for me. He calls me catastrophizing.
My mum
is going to end.
Oh, my God. My mum is the worst catastrophizer. And I'm going on a three-week trip with her to Europe next week, or in a couple of, no, 2 weeks or something. And I'm already like, oh, for fuck's sake, what is she going to say? She even said to my sister something like, this is probably a bit TMI, but my sister had really bad hemorrhoids. She had to go and get it sorted out. And my mum has not got hemorrhoids, right? But she goes to my sister, because my sister brings up the hemorrhoids, and my mum says, yeah, well, I am worried about getting on the plane because I often get constipated and pain, and then I might get a hemorrhoid, and then I might not enjoy my holiday. And, yep, catastrophe.
Oh, my God.
About some hemorrhoids that she doesn't have.
Oh, my God. It makes me think about when I was young and single. Okay, I was older. I was dating a guy much, much younger than me, and he was a MMA fighter.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You love a bit of that stuff.
And he rocked up to my house one day, and he had like 5 stars tattooed across his neck.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, what does that represent? And he goes, oh, it's because I'm an MMA. I'm a 5-star MMA fighter, 5 out of 5. And I'm like, okay, so what does that mean? And like, what? It was before I really knew what MMA was. And I was like, can you explain to me what it means? And he goes, oh, basically it's like ring fighting to the death or until you tap out. And I was like,
one or the other.
Die or just... Okay, I'm out.
Slightly different. Does it have the same meaning? I don't know about that.
About catastrophizing in drama, I'm just like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly. But
or not.
I think that is where we give away our power so much, in just getting into that catastrophizing, like, oh, my God, the thought, like, because I'm always sort of teaching people to do webinars as well, I'm like, and they're confronting, right? You got to put yourself out there and try and weave in an invitation, and there's all these elements, but they're always, that's the thing that I hear back so many times. They're like, oh, well, I don't want to have to do that again. Oh, so, oh, this, like, traumatized me. Like, how can it traumatize you? Like, it's a webinar, for God's sake. I know it's not fun. I know sometimes, I mean, I think they're fun sometimes, but, you know, I know that sometimes you mess things up. I've had tech hell dramas on. I've said the wrong thing on a webinar, like a politically incorrect thing that someone
pulled me up on. It's not like you.
Oh, my God. I know, I'm so bad with things like that. Oh, so, yeah, so look, you're not going to, as long as someone's not going to die, like, let's just map it out. So
I think it's a pre-framing thing too. It's like, let's be honest, back in the day when you and I first started out, ads were easy, funnels were easy, it was easy to make money online, high ticket, low ticket, whatever, it was all easy. Now there's a lot more work to do, and it's a much longer game. It's a longer burn because people don't trust people.
No, there's no trust.
Others left it for the rest of us.
Yeah.
But it's about the pre-framing. So if they're launching something, or they're putting themselves out there, or they're doing their webinar, it's like, just be okay with the fact that your first videos, your first webinar, they're probably going to suck shit.
Horrible.
And you're going to hate them. You'll probably hate every video you ever do.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
So just be okay with it, because that's not what it's about. It's about the value that you're adding. And once you drop that bullshit fear of it's going to suck, and just release it, then it's like, just get on and have fun doing it, because it's about, you know, providing a service.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think just having the right outlets for your emotions, and if you keep that data, whether you may not have all the strategy. I mean, you think about, you know, us even saying back then how easy it was. I mean, do you remember we spent hours filming, you've filmed these videos for me, bless your cotton socks. And, you know, I've looked at how many times they've been watched, but do you know what? I didn't even have the balls to make an offer. Well, I was slightly disorganized.
Oh, the ones we did at your house that time. Yeah, do you remember going out and getting drunk instead, and then we came back at 2 o'clock in the morning.
I know, but we still filmed 5 videos that were actually quite good and people loved them, and I didn't even make an offer. And that's just fear and doubt. Like, I could have just pulled anything together. So I'll do a, you know, they were Facebook ad training videos. It's like, so come in a Facebook group for 5 weeks and $100, like, whatever. But no, So there was our opportunity to make money. And we go, oh, maybe we just, you know, won't do an offer there. It's like where that fear and doubt comes in, and that's why you need someone to hold you to account as well sometimes.
But then you go, so on a larger scale, and like in Lady Balls, I've got this belief shifting exercise that I do, and it's like if you're going in and doing any of that stuff and you've got that fear, you've got that belief in your head that it's not going to work, no one's going to want to buy from me, I suck at this, who would listen to me anyway, I'm just little old da-da-da-da. And so you subconsciously do things to sabotage what you're doing so you can prove that shitty belief to be true.
Mm-hmm.
By not making an offer, there's a little voice in your head going, well, if I fuck this up,
yep,
then at least I'll be right about being the loser that my head thinks that I am.
Exactly.
If you can get past that shit and be aware of that and focus on what you do want instead of what you don't want and just rephrase that, then you do less sabotage moves like that.
Yeah, I absolutely. But God, it's hard sometimes not to say.
When you're in it, you don't know.
It's no, and it's just being able to choose that, make that path of, all right, I'll be brave. Today I'll be brave. Today I'll be brave. I'll just put it out there and I'll do it. Or, you know, you can sit there procrastinating planning on what you're going to do. And I might do this offer and that seems like a good offer. And, oh, I like that software. And what about, I'll just watch another video. I think I just spent half an hour this morning watching some old American Idol video on YouTube that went for 25 minutes. Why? I do not know. And
was it inspiring though? I watched the buzzer moments to get inspired.
I'm watching it going, what are you doing?
You have
so many things to do right now. But then you just go down this rabbit hole to make it, you know, to resist. So, hey, I'm definitely not on here to say I'm perfect, but I'll share my stories and say, hey, I struggle with this stuff too. But if you can get into strategy over emotion, I think you're going to win every time, particularly if you can just go, okay, well, I've got to, you know, stand up for myself and make a stand for what you want. I think mm-hmm. it's really, really important. And I know you do that time and time and again. And I think it's just, it's super important. So, yeah.
We were just talking this morning, I just did a video because I talked with Dad on the weekend. We sat there for about 3 hours and I was going, damn, I wish I recorded that and added a Convos with Dad section.
You totally should.
But it was awesome because we're talking about, we've all got our shit and we've all got a, you know, he's been in hospital with his heart, drugs, he's realized, you know, that he's still working really hard physically and that it's dangerous for him to keep working and he's stop. But he's not stopping.
Yeah.
And we're talking about what drives you to do something. And I'm like, well, it's pretty clear that you and I aren't driven by pain because a near-death experience like that, you would think, would make you go, right, it's time to stop and do something more leveraged. But he's still not stopping. Yeah. So I realized that him and I'm the same. And I guess, like, you know how I said, like, you'll never be broke living out of a car. You'll always come up with something.
Yeah, because it's important enough to me.
Yeah, but you know what? And I think you might be a little bit the same.
Yeah.
What we are driven by is being inspired by stuff. So instead of like, oh my God, I nearly died, I better get my shit together, you're like, oh my God, look at that beautiful thing that I want, or those amazing experiences that I want, or oh my God, I felt so good when I was on that holiday, you know, like when we used to travel and we were like
so good.
Bali, Hawaii, Vegas, you know, all our trips, they were fun and it made us make a push to make more money so we could do more trips like that.
Totally.
It wasn't, oh no, what if I am broke and have to live in a car?
But also we didn't have to push as much because we were in flow, because you're surrounded by others and you have connection and you have that inspiration. I think that's a really good point. I was just having an aha while you were saying there that, you know, one of my core drivers is connection, whether it be creating those environments of connections for my clients or being connected with others. That just puts me so much more in flow. And yeah, I think that's a really, really good point about, pain. I can be sitting there going, oh, okay, well, I probably didn't get my offers out there. I haven't got the consistency. But if I was connected and I was also seeing other people do it constantly in front of me as well, that's another big driver.
And it feels like the next natural step when you're in that flow. Totally.
Absolutely. So, we need some more connection.
Yeah, and I think Even so, between burning the boats and launching Lady Balls, what I was just saying to somebody else today was I go full introvert, full extrovert. But when I'm left to my own devices, if I'm alone too much, I get in my own head and start to beat myself up. So yeah. I said, what I'm going to start doing while I launch the new Lady, as I launch the new Lady Ball Star, is I'm going to do, probably start doing a free live webinar, no slides or anything, just a Q&A webinar on Thursdays, because if I'm not serving people, I feel useless.
Yeah.
If I'm not doing something to help someone, I'm like, well, what fucking use am I? I'm not very good at this shit. At what shit? You're not doing anything. So just go serve some people, even if it's, you know, on a free webinar.
Absolutely. And just connecting on lives. And also I find I do get a bit inspiration from, you know, mapping it out to thinking like even for you, Jobs, with Lady Balls, it's like, okay, what are those top three persistent problems and pain points that your audience is facing, and who do you really, really dig on serving, and where have you created, and then you sort of like map that out. Okay, what would help them do that more? And, you know, like just getting into there, you know, we've talked about sometimes how hard it is to just sort of land on that message. And some of my clients, I mean, one of my clients, we had been going back and forth on some of this stuff for ages, and then she'll come out with this, okay, I've got it now, and she'll write it down, and I'm still like, it's still really esoteric. And in a way, I feel like saying that might just be her. But if she showed up every single day sharing the message and her truth, it would still get momentum. So it does shortcut your success to land on the right message to market. But your massive strength is that people just want more of you, and they want to hear from you, and they want to see you. So you've just got to be showing up and visibly sharing this.
But the other day, that conversation with you, since we last talked, I changed my offer.
Oh, yeah, cool.
Having that conversation, I realized something. We've always been taught high ticket, and high ticket, it's easier to make money with high ticket because you need
less yeses. God, that's a time.
There's points to get to that. But what I realized was making Lady Balls a year-long super high ticket, almost like an elitist thing, it wasn't sitting right with me. And what I realized was, Lady Balls, for me, the reason I went to that instead of just marketing, and I went to the mindset first, leading with all of that, is personal growth and helping Lady Ballers is my passion. Like, that lights me up. And by going too high ticket and having less clients and higher ticket, I wasn't reaching people. And I realized for me, Lady Balls is a movement. It's not about the money. It's a movement.
Movement. Great.
And going high ticket was me feeling like it's about the money. So I changed my offer, took out the less leverage stuff, made Lady Balls Club more like a tenth of the price.
Yeah, great.
Because then I'm reaching more of my Lady Ballers. It wasn't fair.
We need to put your offer on the automated webinar and jack it up with some ads. So 100%. I think that would be the way to go. I mean, even the other day, I did a joint webinar with someone over in the States. She's a doll, but her husband's actually Australian. And so we always geek out on some, you know, conversion and ads and what's happening there and what's that converting at? And what are you doing with this? And because I'm just that kind of conversion geek. But, you know, and I'm like, oh, you know, what are you spending on ads? And, you know, the scale that people are spending on ads on 497 offers and you know, 2Xing, 3Xing, is there. So you know, that is the way to, especially with more of a lifestyle type you know, offer, where it is about coming together and it's creating that movement and addressing that real, like, I'm my fire's been dimmed, I need to reignite, I need that inspiration, I need that connection, and totally coming back together.
Marketing's everywhere.
Yeah
So with your so what's your key thing that you're working on these days?
Well, I'm just reducing layers of complexity. So for me, it is really honing, optimizing, creating space in what I do so that now I can have some leverage and practice what I preach. So I share with my clients that, hey, creating your own group coaching program or mastermind is a really great way to help people and leverage your time and use things that you've already created to get the transformation that you originally thought they'd get, but maybe they didn't sell. So we concentrate really on, you know, repackaging and positioning their offer. We might reprice it. All those things that we kind of talk about, getting clear on their message and who their market is.
And what do you see for those? Because given that the people listening are lady ballers and a lot of them are at a pivot point where they're launching something new.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see as the biggest fear for them?
Mm-hmm.
For most of your clients where they need to strap on their lady balls, what's the biggest fear that comes up?
There's two or three. One is someone else knows more than me on that topic, or so-and-so does that and they do it better than I do. Well, that's fine. Great. No worries. Well, you just got to show up consistently and keep talking to the issues and connecting and being consistent and putting an offer out there. It doesn't matter if someone else does it.
With your own flavor, just being yourself.
Yeah. And look, I think we hear that a lot and we think, oh yeah, I know that logically, but it still doesn't take away that fear. So I'm acknowledging that that fear exists, but if we can create the right strategy to show you that you can get results, you know, I've had a couple of therapists actually as my clients. One is an anxiety, she helps women with anxiety, and another one helps them with emotional eating. Don't know, oh geez, I wouldn't need that help or anything. But anyway, so I think for them to go from, I don't know why, but in America therapists get paid fuck all. In Australia, you'd at least be making, you know, a couple hundred bucks an hour. But in America, they make like 50 bucks an hour or something. It's ridiculous and have to rely on the insurers and all the shit. Anyway, to be able to show them that they could be welcoming in clients or like $3,000 clients to give them an actual outcome without anyone actually having known them before is blowing their mind. They don't have to sit hour by hour in a chair opposite someone. So, if they thought, oh my God, someone else knows more about anxiety or emotional eating. Yeah, other people know way more than they do.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. So it's nailing the problem and it's marketing to the problem and not the, you know, the pleasure or the, you know, the force, the faraway land. It's making it really real, raw and, you know, really relevant to them. So anyway, they think there's someone better at it. The other thing they do is, I can't charge that. I'm not worth it. I'm not experienced. I'm not certified, right? Yeah. So they think they need some certification or a degree to make that happen. And the other one, there's one other one and I can't think what it is. Oh, if they're going to do a group program, they think, what if only one person buys it?
And Yeah,
they're the big ones.
Then so they're going to be stoked.
All the time. Yeah, those are the three biggest kind of objections, if you will, for stepping up and earning more. Really, at the end of the day, I help people earn more money. Right, so they can have more freedom, but that's pretty much what they want to do. But they're full of reasons why it can't happen. Anyway, that's what I do and help them kind of ignite that possibility. One time, a kinesiologist said to me, "You're like a lightning rod for someone's potential," or they put, you know, go in. And I was like, "Oh yeah, it's just so cool when other people can see what you do so much better than you can." So.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's good to just get. I believe in women and their possibility, and as you do, Jodes, being able to back them in that. It's so much more. That's your higher purpose. So much more than, you know, helping them with their marketing. Whereas you know, for me, like, marketing kind of turns me on. You know,
and it's because you can reframe it. It's a vehicle to get them the freedom. So you're not helping. It's not like I'm helping women with their marketing. It's I'm helping women with freedom and confidence to have the life that they want. And your vehicle is marketing. Whereas I couldn't reframe it. I wasn't reframing it. I couldn't reframe it like that. So I'm better to bring in experts like you who really thrive on that stuff and are really brilliant at it. If people want to reach out and learn more from you, or
my handle on Insta is I am Victoria Gibson, IAM Victoria Gibson, GIBSON, and on Facebook, just type in my name, you should find my page. And my website's victoriagibson.com. But if you're seeing this somewhere, like share it out and tag us in it. I'd love to see it and share it on my stories too and stuff like that. So connect. I'm very accessible and love answering questions. So hit me up.
You thrive on being around people and their connection.
I do. I love it. So this is cool. I'm so excited for Lady Balls. So how
finally got to do this. It's fun.
I'm like, why aren't you doing this, Lady Balls? Why isn't it your thing?
It's only taken me 5 years.
It's your brand, sister. It is your, it's your purpose and your mission. I love it. All right.
Well, thank you so much. I will put the links to you with this video anyway so people can see it.
Cool. All right, love. Awesome.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.